But look, 3 years in a row, and not just 3 years in a row, semi-finals, victors, quarter-finals. We haven't just gone there and got a participation medal. We've done all right.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Like everyone else, I'm from Australia, mate. That's my Ange Postecoglou impression. Hello, patrons, Tottenham. And, you know, we're going to fucking beat them, mate.
G'day, mate. I see we got some more cracking team news come out this morning.
Did we?
Yeah, Werner out for the season. Not surprised.
Following him, obviously. Send him back.
He's no, we've got to pay his wages till June the 30th. Following, obviously, his early withdrawal on Sunday. Ben Davis confirmed out now as well. So that's both left-backs fucking injured now, so...
You don't even play any football.
I will get Emerson at left back by the looks of it against Madueke / Palmer and Salah at the weekend. Did you watch the derby?
No, I listened to it on the radio.
We obviously talked about it quite a lot.
I grew
Monday.
Up with Radio 5 Live, BBC.
As being your way.
And actually back in the day, if you remember, because when I was growing up, and obviously when you were growing up, we didn't have Sky.
I can't imagine listening to a game on the radio now, but I know I did it plenty.
Yeah, we didn't have Sky back in the day. It wasn't, every game wasn't televised the way it was in the 90s. And it was actually Capital Gold, 1548, you remember?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Jonathan Pearce was on Capital Gold, yeah?
Yeah.
And then years ago, so I used to listen to a lot of football on the radio when I was early teens, all the way up to maybe 16, 17. And then obviously it was much more prevalent on TV and really grew. But I used to listen to a lot, and I like listening to games on the radio. It's nostalgic for me a little bit, I would say, more than anything. So I listen to it on the radio.
I can't believe that I would ever do that again now, but obviously it was commonplace in the 90s. I remember actually a game, we was driving somewhere on a Saturday and we were playing Chelsea away, and on the commentary it was a chance for Alan, and Dad shouted goal. It was a goal by Allen. Obviously, we had Paul Allen playing for us. It was fucking Clive Allen of Chelsea had scored. I remember teletext. So sometimes you could have a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday where there'd be like 8, 9 games on at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and you only used to have Super Sunday in the first year. And I remember the year my dad had sciatica himself. He had it really bad, winter 1992. And we were playing Oldham away. And Teddy Sheringham went on to win the Golden Boot that year, had not made a great start to his Tottenham career, despite the fact he went on to win the Golden Boot that season. Playing fucking Oldham away, and it just came up on teletext, Sheringham had scored 1-1. I remember going to cuddle my dad, and he weren't impressed. A, because he didn't like Sheringham, and B, because he couldn't fucking move. But yeah, it's come a long way, our viewing experiences of football.
I mean, radio commentary... it's better quality than TV commentary, which I understand is a completely different product.
But with more descriptive, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, they chat less shit on the radio, in my opinion, than the guys on TV do. And you can't get away with just like being lazy because there are no pictures to go with it. But it's very nostalgic for me to listen back. Capital Gold and all that shit. Five Live was my staple. And obviously when I'm driving, if I'm driving, which I drive more than you because you don't have a driving license, so obviously I'll catch games in the car all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be Tottenham though. I'm trying to think what the last Tottenham game I listened to on the radio would have been. It would have been in the early noughties. I would say a long time ago. I can't believe I would ever listen to a Tottenham game on the radio ever again. Sorry to say.
I'd listen to West Ham on the radio. I quite enjoy it.
Yeah, because the description is better than the visual for you, isn't it?
Well, let's see. We don't get to play you again. 4 points off you this season, just reminding you.
We have confirmed that we're finishing above you.
Oh, we can't catch you, no?
Nope.
Oh, fair play.
No, I think you're on, what, 48?
Yeah.
You got 3 to go. And
it's easy
60.
When you don't have any cup games to play all year.
Yeah,
game a week, mate. We'll have one game a week next season.
We need 4 points to qualify for the Europa League.
That's easy. Well, I say it's easy. You should have Burnley and Sheffield United.
You would think. I mean, well, that's the maximum we'll need. That's on Manchester United and Newcastle winning all their other games and drawing with each other.
Okay.
Obviously, if one wins that fixture or the other, it might be we only need 3 points, possibly. So,
has the fallout from the North London derby gone. Like, it's not, you know how sometimes these things can live on social for quite a while. There was no expectation for you to win anyway. So I think it's kind of done now, isn't it? It's not one where you're still getting pelters from Arsenal fans.
It helps
sticking the boot in.
It helps as well.
There's another game in like a day.
There's another game tomorrow and another big game.
Chelsea,
right?
Yeah. You know,
Chelsea's a big game as well, irrespective of where the two teams are in the league. So, yeah, you move on from it fairly quickly, and that's the best thing. Just get straight into Chelsea and straight into Liverpool, and it becomes something that's gone, whereas the Newcastle defeat did kind of hang for 2 weeks, and then that 2 week build for the derby, fucking hell, was so bad. It didn't help us not playing. And you know, you said you haven't helped not having the cup games. We would have helped having a game in between.
You do need one game a week. I think long and gaps.
If
is
we'd
shit.
Have played Man City in the middle, I might not have been so bothered about potentially supporting my team against them. I also think actually, I don't know, maybe I've muted a lot of it on my timeline, but I feel like Arsenal fans have been fairly well behaved.
Okay.
Purely because I think there was a shit themselves at the end of the game, as even Arteta mentioned.
And if they don't win the league, it's almost, it won't feel irrelevant, but it will be.
It would have felt, I mean, obviously, if it finished 3-3, I mean, that
it would have felt like a defeat.
You'd have called that, you'd have called it a bottle job from that position, even though it would be circumstantial because of individual error, and then it's probably a goal from across near the end or something like that. So, no, I think they've been quite well behaved. And I think, to be fair to them, this part of that is they realise how good they are as a team and they're in a battle for the title. So, actually, there's bigger things for them than glowing about St Tottenham Day or winning the North London Derby. They're trying to catch City, right? That's actually bigger. Whereas we don't have that. So, but as I also said on Monday, I feel like if you're going to lose the game, that was almost the way to win it, because at half time, you're just thinking, don't get slapped here. Like, I'm aware the biggest North London derby victory is 5-0, right, for both teams. And you're like, well, that's realistic at this stage. Irrespective of, we didn't deserve to be 3-0 down, but obviously conceded some stupid goals. You are fearing that kind of legacy game that lives forever. There's only two ways the game's either going to get remembered forever. It's either they're going to win by a scoreline like that, or we're going to produce a miracle. And at half time, I knew which one was more likely. It was them going on winning 5-0 rather than us producing a miracle. So the fact you have that at the moment, that moment at the end where you feel involved, and there's obviously so much on the line, but it is more, you can't, people say, I've heard people say this week, and again, it hasn't been that many Arsenal fans, more fans of other clubs, like, you're belittling yourself, like not trying to challenge for the Champions League and stuff like that. The only thing in my head there is, it's the moment, it's the derby. Forget even that they're going for the title. It's Tottenham against Arsenal. You don't want to fucking lose the game, whatever the circumstance are. Then the second thing in your head is, stop them. The final thing is, well, for us to catch Villa, we probably need to be winning this game anyway. A draw's not even good enough in this race. I mean, technically, you know, people saying, oh, well, Tottenham are going to throw the game against Man City. There's every chance that Villa will actually be confirmed as fourth after this weekend.
But this is what I say. You lose your two games and they win theirs.
It's done.
Yeah.
It's done. And I said prior to last weekend, Villa would only need a maximum of 4 points, I think. And that still stands. I mean, if Villa drew their three remaining games, we need to get 10 points to level with them. So that means beating at least one of Liverpool, Chelsea, City, and drawing at least one of them. So it's beating Burnley, Sheffield United, taking at least 4 points from the other three. There's no race here. There's no contest. Villa deserve it. So, and that's the big thing now that's going around in the Tottenham circles is, well, what do we do when we actually play City? It's just a fucking horrendous fault. It's going to be so weird. Arsenal fans will want Tottenham to win, and Tottenham fans won't want Tottenham to win. That's legitimately what's going to happen. I said already on Monday, like, I'm not sure if people are aware of the consequences of that for fantasy as well. People who don't agree with that don't understand the rivalry.
Yeah.
I get it if we get to the game and hypothetically results have happened in between and we beat City and then we overtake Villa to fourth, then I get it, right? There's a prize on the end for your own football club. Then there's a debate to be had. But as just said, it almost feels more likely that Villa will confirm fourth this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
I don't actually think it will, because I think we'll get something from the two games, although I do think they'll win at Brighton as well. But it will effectively be done. If Villa win at Brighton, it's effectively done. So under that circumstance when literally there is nothing the result will do. We will qualify for the Europa League. We can't qualify for the Champions League. The only thing winning a football match would do is helping Arsenal. Like, genuinely, what do people want? What do people expect under that circumstance?
You to lose.
Well, it's more, what do people expect the fans to feel like?
I'm looking at tickets for the Luton game.
For you? You want to go? Last chance?
It will be my last game for a long time. There's fuck all available.
Someone will sort you a ticket if you want to go, mate.
Yeah, no, there are singles around. So if I'm going with a few mates, people have to sit in different places. So I'm sure Sham will be there.
You're going to miss it? Have you missed it this year?
Nah. The reality is, when I look at everything else, adult ticket, 45 bones for Luton at home. You're having a laugh, mate.
Sounds fairly standard to me.
I should probably pay it. I've had a lot going on, right? So especially since October when we decided we were moving. Like, that's been the biggest priority for me. So have I missed it? No, because there's just been more things going on that are way more important than West Ham. The European run with the Europa League and the quality of the teams in there, it was always very unlikely that we were... Whereas with the Conference League, we were going to win it. Europa League was very unlikely that we were going to win it. So did I miss the European run? Not hugely. It only really got tasty when we got to Leverkusen. Up until then, we didn't have any...
Europa's nothing until you hit the knockouts.
No. And obviously getting Freiburg in the first round of the knockouts when we'd already played them was a bit of a anti-climax as well. We've had some good wins this season and we've had some good performances. We've also had some atrocious performances. Felt like a holding pattern season, really. The signings have worked out well overall. I haven't missed it, to be honest with you. I haven't missed it.
I'm looking forward to being in Europa next year. New format. I've looked at the teams that are likely to qualify as it stands and stuff. There'll be six or seven good teams in there, which will include my team. And I'm quite looking forward to that rather than the... I don't know, I speak about this a lot. It's like, you fight to get in this competition, you've got no chance of fucking winning.
The Champions League. Yeah.
We're not ready for that. We're not ready. It's different. You could look at Villa and say, with respect, Villa aren't going to win the Champions League next year, although they've got a manager who's proven European competition. But for them, it's first time. It's like, it's so important. Yeah. And, you know, you got back in this year to the Conference League. You jump up, you kind of jump to competition. It will mean everything to them. I don't know. As I discussed with Clayton a couple of weeks ago, I just feel like the jump would be too much for us because the quality of the squad behind the 11 isn't ready. And I think what has become clear to Tottenham fans over this week, it's quite interesting in terms of what the team needs. I think there's a realisation over recent months that the team needs more than maybe people thought based on the way we'd started the season. I mean, the whole attacking lineup basically needs upgrading. And I'd refer that all the way to even the number six position, the central midfielders, the front three. It all needs
Madison's
improving.
been a disappointment's probably harsh, but hasn't lived up to expectations as well.
And he's just, let's be fair about it, he's not performed well since he came back from injury. He flew in the first 2-3 months of the season.
But you flew in the first 2-3 months of the season.
Let me ask you this, right? Because I got asked this question. I did it for the unanswered cues for the advanced on Monday. It was a question in response to the main pod for some prick of a gooner who wanted to have a dig. But he asked a question that was happy to answer was how many Tottenham players would get in the Arsenal 11? You tell me how many.
Keeper's debatable. Raya probably... gets in ahead of Vicario, but I don't think there's a lot in it. I think Vic's been perfectly fine. Centre-back's no chance. Porro versus Ben White.
No chance is very harsh there. I'd say you could have individual debates there.
What, on Romero and Van de Ven?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would take Saliba and Gabriel over Romero and Van de Ven. That doesn't mean that they're bad. Even Porro versus Ben White, right? Porro is not a bad player. But this season, Ben White's been excellent. Yep. Left-back... Arsenal have had no consistency, so Udogi, I would say, probably does get in ahead of Tomiyasu or our Ukrainian fellow, Zinchenko. So probably, I'd say Udogi for sure. Holding midfield, Bissouma ain't getting in ahead of Rice. Odegaard is going to get in ahead of Maddison. Saka's going to play ahead of Kulusevski. Left, you've got Martinelli or Trossard versus Timo Werner, would you say? Or I mean,
you could put Sonny into that debate, couldn't you?
So probably Sonny. I mean, Sonny would, you'd play, but it would be a little bit on historical over the last season. And then up front, I mean, you don't really have a striker. Richarlison?
Well, again, your Son Richarlison Havertz conversation there, isn't it?
Or it's Havertz or Jesus even. So Son and Udogi, I'd say two.
So my answer was none.
Yeah, I mean, I'd play Udogi. Like they, because they don't
just on form. Like, I mean, if Madison performed like he did in the first 3 months, you'd arguably go right, Rice, Odegaard, Madison, right? A full, impactful, and on form Heung-Min Son, you probably find a place for. I think the Udogi one is up for debate. You could make a case for him. All the others defensively, Vicario, Rea, Romero, Saliba, Gabriel van der Ven, Porro, White, I think you could debate. At the moment, I think you'd pick the Arsenal player in each circumstance, but you could have a very serious debate about that. I think there's even some Arsenal fans would maybe even say van der Ven over Gabriel. Maybe. I don't think you'd find any would say Saliba.
Nah.
Romero over Saliba or Porro over White. So you could have a debate about some of the guys defensively. But offensively, you're asking, oh, okay, if Madison's in best form or if Son's in best form, at the moment, we wouldn't get any Arsenal team.
No.
So for me, at the moment, it's none.
They've scored the 30 amount of goals this year so far.
So then you reflect on that. This is what I did after I'd answered that question Monday night. I reflected on that. And then I thought about the game more and the way we'd had so much of the ball in the first half. I think that would have been uncomfortable for Arsenal fans watching the game. In certainly the opening period, I think even that moment when van der Ven equalised, they'd have thought, fucking hell, onslaught is coming straight away here.
You'd only had momentum at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, to have 72% of the ball against them, and it wasn't that we didn't have any chances. There's that disallowed goal. Romero hit the post. Son had an effort he should have done much better with that he blazed over the bar. So we had moments within that. We had a few big chances ourselves. So it wasn't just possession for the sake of possession. We'd actually played all right. Like if we'd have walked in at 0-0 at half time under what we'd watched first half, I think there's every chance most neutrals would have thought, I fancy Tottenham to win this from here because of the momentum and improvement we've seen from the team constantly in second halves of game. Saw it again at the weekend. But then reflect on that more and go, so man for man, we're probably inferior to them all the way over the pitch. And yet, pretty much everyone's like, "Wow, it's a pretty equal game, that."
Yeah, I mean, when you say you're inferior,
margin moments.
You're not. It's not like
they're better at us.
It's not like Arsenal versus Sheffield United. You're still fifth in the table. You're still talking about a very good team.
Yeah, but there's a distance off that. I mean, think of it the other way around. You start putting some of them Arsenal players in the Tottenham team, like put Odegaard and Rice in that Tottenham team. Mm-hmm. Just them two players. And ask yourself what sort of impact that would make.
Well,
to
lift the rest of the players hugely as well.
Fucking that as well. But your quality level there is up massively. And even things like, yeah, Saka versus Kulusevski. And as I said on Monday, I thought Kulusevski actually played really well on Sunday. But again, it's a level up. So we need across the front. Like all those players we've got in the attacking areas are all fine. But we probably need upgrades on all of them. Bar, I'm happy for Brennan Johnson to continue with the improvement that he's shown over the last couple of months. And you ain't going to get all of that in one hit, in one window.
Problem for you is, next two games, Chelsea and Liverpool, I could see you winning both. I could see you losing both.
Or we could lose both heavily.
And you could win both as well.
Not handsomely. We could win both, yeah.
Yeah, this is the frustration with inconsistency now.
But then, so then it flips both ways. So you look at the defensive record and the problem on set plays. And actually, again, I was thinking more, I kind of defended Romero a bit on Monday and Romero played really well on Sunday. But actually, we had a problem for a little while on corners, even under Conte. And quite often it was Romero was the problem who was at fault in terms of tracking runners. We've got no one who's dominant on set plays. So you can say, okay, it's the setup, it's bad. So Vicario doesn't quite have the confidence yet to come and come. Romero's not dominant. Van der Ven's poor in the air. When you look at the rest of the team, you say, well, who's going to head things out? Like, who is it? Even in that, who is it? Who is going to be dominant in that team? Like, I think we've missed Kane from that perspective this year. What are you going to do? Bring some back and ask him to defend the near post and stuff. Like, it's a massive... Richarlison would be one of the most dominant ones. You
maybe
trust
Bissouma.
Nah.
No good.
So there's no dominance in that team. And I think if you reflect as well on not just Arsenal, but Manchester City, and you look at those two teams now, or just look at the physical power of them, like on set plays and stuff. The whole team is fucking giants near enough. And if you have a Bernardo Silva, then he's not in and around it, is it? It's just one player. If you have a Trossard, it's fine. It's one player. He's not a part of it. But all through the spine of the team, and even the fullbacks, they're like fucking giants across them. We've got nothing. So maybe it's not so much the way we're setting up at defending corners. Maybe we just don't have the personnel or players. And the goalkeeper at the moment, but I'm really confident that will improve, that can actually deal with those sort of fine margin scenarios of set plays that's cost us massively this year. That needs to be addressed, but I don't know if Ange will address that. Who do you go and find that is a number six that's not just someone who can sit in there and play like let's just say Tottenham, we're going to have Modric back for a year or two, like, great. Can he play the position? Yeah, on the ball, great. Off the ball, bad. Does it help the set piece problem? No, it makes it worse. So Tottenham need to not just find a new number six, but need to find one that's going to be actually dominant aerially, I think. Otherwise, this problem is going to continue with the personnel, because although I'm really happy with that back four and the goalkeeper moving forward, I don't think the set piece problem improves until Van de Ven particularly learns to be dominant in the air.
Interesting.
I think that problem will just continue.
Let's talk a bit about West Ham, which there's only one topic of conversation at the moment.
Manager.
Everything is all about the manager. And I think this is just where we're at now, between now and the end of the season. I think we'll do all right. We've got three games left. We've got Chelsea, Man City on the last day, and Luton in between. I think we'll get 4 points out of the last three. We'll do all right, fine, whatever. But I don't think anything, until the manager is sorted, I don't think anything else will fall into place. And as with West Ham, I mean, sometimes you get it with your club and plenty of clubs as well. You get silly season rumours, speculation about everyone and their dog, which is really frustrating. But at the moment, flavour of the month is Lopetegui.
Is that the latest one? I know has been talked about with Milan, and a lot of their fans are protesting against that, apparently.
Yeah, he was potentially going to go there, but it's Fonseca and Lopetegui are the two that I think are most popular. I don't know what happened with Amorim. I need to look into that. He was supposed to do an interview on Saturday or something where he was going to reveal what happened in the meeting with Sullivan, but I don't know if that actually got...
So we know that meeting definitely happened.
Yeah, definitely happened.
Interesting.
But then, and obviously he's definitely not going to Liverpool now. So if he's looking for a move, he's definitely going to need to go somewhere. Maybe AC Milan might be the one, but maybe he'll end up staying at Sporting potentially.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, if it's not now, he'll get a job that he wants eventually.
Whenever he wants it,
I imagine.
Truth be told. So, yeah. Manager is the biggest thing. I think we're definitely going to go European. I can't see us picking up a British manager.
So you'd rule out the likes of Rob Edwards or something like that?
I would say so. Unless we got to the desperation stage where we decided to part company with Moyes, announced that, and then tried to get loads of managers and then shit the bed in Nuno's kind of what happened with you guys in Nuno.
Do you think they'll announce it about Moyes next week?
I fucking hope so.
I.e. before the last
Luton game. Yeah, because I would want to send him off, man. He's been one of our best managers. He's got us a fifth place in the league. He's got us sixth place in the league. He's got us a trophy.
You're going to really struggle to qualify for Europe from here, aren't you?
Yeah. It's done. Yeah. But look, 3 years in a row, and not just 3 years in a row, semi-finals, victors, quarter-finals. We haven't just gone there and got a participation medal. We've done all right. And we're going to
fair play trophy.
Yeah, we didn't just go there and do nothing. We got out of the group stages. We had really good record overall. The teams that we lost with, Frankfurt to go to the final, fucking Leverkusen, solid teams. So yeah, held high. But now time for a change. If we get the right manager with the right tactics, I think we're going to have a really good season next year, because we still got some really good elements to the team. Like Edson Álvarez is wicked. He gets about the pitch so well. Kudus Bowen, I don't see going anywhere. There's still players within.
Pacatar will go though, right?
Yeah.
That's a creativity void that will need to be fixed.
He did come out the other day again and say, I'm still a West Ham player and I love it here, and it'd be wrong for me to say I don't enjoy my time here. But he's going.
Say, you keep telling me he's going to City.
I'm sure he's going because I think the deal has been done behind the scenes. But I don't think he's irreplaceable. Stuyden, I don't think
he's
going to.
Why is he still intentionally getting booked every game, by the
way? He's a fucking nutter. He's a nutter, but that's part of the interview process for Man City. Do you know how to get a tactical foul in the last 15 minutes of a game and get yourself a yellow to break up an attack?
But sometimes he does
it. You can come and join for
He does it quite early in the game.
He's a fucking
nutter.
He's a nutter. But he's my nutter at the moment, so what can I do? A lot of people talking about him getting dropped, but really right now...
What?
Yeah, because he hasn't been playing great.
Okay.
I think they think his head's been turned. Three games to go. Okay. Fuck him off after the club early. Fine. But I don't. I wouldn't. I'd still play him. At the moment, it's Lopetegui, Fonseca are the two that are really getting mentioned, and then Amorim obviously was in and out very quickly. Do you know who I want? Graham Potter.
Kind of Ajax, we think.
Is he? Mm. Oh, shame. I want Graham Potter because I want a manager that can work with the youth. We've got a wealth of talent in the youth set up.
Yes, your kids' team have been good for a while.
Wealth of talent, and I want to see them break through. I want to see them break through and do well. And so I want a manager, a coach that can come in and is willing to blood through the youth because we could do really well with that.
Talking of which, so have we, right? I mean, talking about actually defensive players who could be really dominant for us on set plays. The young boy Alfie Dorrington, I've mentioned a few times, he will be that. He will
just
be that.
He's
got elements. It reminds me of Michael Dawson. Like, he comes out and he's fine. He's not breathtaking on the ball yet. But in terms of his dominance aerially, like, he has it already as a young boy. That will grow into him naturally once he plays men's football. And Ashley Phillips, who's been on loan at Plymouth, might be another one who grows into that as well. So I'm not actually sure, like, we need another... It's weird, we've got a problem, but I don't know if we need another centre-back.
I'd be interested to see what transfer business we do in the summer now. I think goalkeeper-wise, we're okay. Ariola's fine, and Fabianski, when he's been called on, has been all right. I mean, Fabianski's getting very old, but I don't think it's a problem area that we need to fix. Even centre-back, Zouma's been all right. Mavropanos's been okay. Agüero, I think, will go in the summer. And then we've only got Ogbonna, so we're definitely going to be in the market for centre-backs. I could see us putting
Ogbonna's in... Ogbonna's how old?
33.
Was that old?
33, 34. No, he might be older. I'll check. But he's not much older. 33,
I'll check it
34.
For you.
I think Max Kilman will be one that we'll definitely go in for. We were talking about him in the January transfer window. Depending on whether or not Wolves need money. I even think going in for a Branthwaite.
It's 35, Ogbonna.
35, yeah, he's too old. If no one else goes in the market for someone like a Branthwaite, if we can pick him up for 40 million or something.
And actually he's 36 at the end of this month.
I think we're definitely in for a right back at some point as well. Soufal, he always gives you 110% and stuff, and he never really lets you down, but sometimes he doesn't give you the big upside potential that we want. We'll definitely be in for a centre-back and a right-back.
Ever since he's had
a good season, actually, isn't he? Yeah, and he's got another good season solid in him. He's 32 as well, but eventually he'll need replacing.
Is he?
I'm sure he's 32. I heard it yesterday that I heard Emerson 32.
I didn't know that.
Well, you thought he was younger?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I've heard it on a West Ham YouTube channel.
Oh, you got Ogbonna wrong, so I'm now feeling the need to check on that one as
Do
well.
Do it, check it, because I want to know for myself.
Yeah, he's 29, mate.
Oh, is he that young? Okay, so they were talking shit on Hammer's chat yesterday. He was saying he's 32, he might have another year left, a good year left in him. He's 29, he's got plenty of time.
30 in August.
Yeah, he's perfectly fine. We'll need to replace Paqueta if he goes, for sure. And we're going to need a striker as well. The name that was getting mentioned for the striker was Ivan Toney the other day. And I could see that because I wonder if at his age now, at 29/30, whether clubs like Arsenal, Spurs think, do you know what, for 2 years, 40, 50 million, 50, 60 million, is it worth it? Are we buying a player that's just a short-term solution, not a long-term solution, and then just bulking at it? I could see him almost ending up not at a Champions League level club and then not having the pick of choice elsewhere.
If none of the big six wanted to go for him, then yeah, sure. But that would only then be, I think, with respect in the circumstance where he feels like, well, the moment's gone for him.
And I think it might have.
It might have. Look, Tottenham are going to want a forward, but we won't get in a bidding war for Tony with other clubs. As I said, I don't actually think stylistically that's the right fit for us. Not that I'd complain if we bought him.
Yeah.
But I don't think
you'd say
the right
Solanke,
fit.
Calvert-Lewin and Tony would all be available this summer.
Calvert-Lewin, did you say?
Yeah, would all be available.
No one would buy Calvert-Lewin, mate.
You don't think so?
Nah.
Not even at...
Well, his injury record.
Yeah, but the thing is, Everton need money. So what are they going to take for him? 20, 30 million?
But who's going to give it to them?
I think someone might. He's still a talented striker.
Yeah, of course. He's a good target, man. But it almost feels ideal for Everton's scenario. And actually, most Evertonians will tell you he's been shit, even when he has played the last couple of years. Although I think injuries are big... impact on that. The one to watch might be Liverpool.
For Tony?
Yeah, because they've got a new manager coming in. He might not rate Darwin Nunes, right? If they decide they want to move that on, then
50% of the world don't.
They're going to want a nine. And, you know, is Tony good enough to play for Liverpool? Yeah. And I think Arsenal might have looked at it, but to be fair, Klaitz was quite adamant that he thought that they wouldn't need a number nine, and the way Havertz is performing in that position at the moment has mitigated that to be not necessary. I mean, if you've got Gabriel Jesus as your backup number nine, like, it's absolutely fine, isn't it? City won't need anything, won't go there. Like I said, I don't think we'll get involved. The other one, of course, is Chelsea. If Chelsea decide they want to go down that route, he'll go to Chelsea, won't he?
Yeah, I would suspect so. They'll pay the money and give him a long-term contract.
I imagine he'll end up at Chelsea, but I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool... had some interest, potentially might be one to keep an eye on from that perspective. We need to do more business than we thought we'd need to do, I think, but we need to be patient about it at the same time. The problem is we haven't got any many sellable assets ourselves.
You got money though. They said they're talking about a couple of hundred million.
Oh, we can spend. I mean, there's the Kane money from last year. Admittedly, a lot of that was spent kind of hidden last year, in the sense Kulusevski and Romero's deals were made permanent. I don't know if people really realise that. That's kind of when the monies would come out. It's part of the Kane going last year. So the money's basically been spent, but we didn't overly spend on top of that, so we can spend again. But in terms of the sellable assets, like, there's not many to get rid of. This is part why I've said, like, and nobody's come back to me and said, it's ridiculous, James, sell Son. If you can get a good deal for him, sell him.
I think clubs are more open to that now, selling big name players when they get close to the end of their career. There's a few players in our squad I'm really interested to see what happens with a new manager, like Ben Johnson, for example. I think he's an all right player. He just never gets minutes, and he gets chopped around in position so much, but he's had some really impactful games for us. I'd like to see him stay. I think Maxwell Cornet has been fit and has not been getting any minutes at all. I feel like another manager coming in.
Sorry, Maxwell Cornet's been fit?
Yeah, he's been available for games. He's been sitting on the bench. Okay. But he's not been getting on the pitch. You know,
finally got fit, and then Moyes realised he doesn't rate him.
He doesn't rate him, right? So even Danny Ings, for example, I don't think Danny Ings falls into this bracket. But again, he's been fit and on the bench and not getting minutes when we've been chasing goals and stuff. And Mbeumo, I think within the squad, there are players that, like you had with Udogi and Bissouma and what have you, that were in the squad that were good players that can add value to the team. But if the manager don't fancy him, he don't fancy them. New manager comes in, fancies them, and suddenly you're like, okay, you're quite decent.
And we have to be clear as well, actually, despite some of the whinges about some of the defensive stuff recently. Vicario, Udogi, Van de Ven, and even Porro, right, because people didn't think Porro could play the position, have all way exceeded expectation this year, individually. And will improve as a collective because they're all still young.
Yeah.
And it's easy to forget that after some of the things you've watched recently. That area of the team, with the likes of Alfie Dorrington in the background, Ashley Phillips in the background, Dragosin, ironically, would improve the situation aerially on set pieces, but I'm a little concerned about him. We need better understudy fullbacks, particularly to play the left-back position. But otherwise, we don't need a lot there. We need to focus more our attention. And we need a backup goalkeeper. That's clear as well. Because you won't always get lucky enough to have Vicario available for every game. But it's more the focus got to be offensively. one young boy I want to mention. So it was in the squad. It wasn't in the 20. How many subs you get now? Nine, isn't it? He wasn't in the 20 named at the weekend. He might be tomorrow night. He was basically 21st man at the weekends. Mikey Moore is a player I've mentioned before. He reminds me, ironically, as we're playing him tomorrow night, he reminds me of young Mason Mount. Looks like a player who could play multiple positions offensively, technically extremely sound, good little ball carrier. You think of that young energy of Mason Mount, that's what he reminds me of as a player. He's not 17 till the end of this month, I think. There's every chance he'll be in the squad tomorrow night. I'd rather he played at the moment than Madison.
Yeah, I think we'd all rather see our kid. Like, we had George Erfy the other week. I'd rather see the kids now for the last few. We all would, I think, particularly if you've not got much to play for.
Well, let's be very clear. When we play Manchester City, the team should be Brandon Austin in goal.
Yeah. Whatever. Roll over and have your belly tickled. Patrons, we'll be back at you.
Come on, Bournemouth.
Next week. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great week. Can you Spurs? Cue music, please. Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.